During the mid to late 1990s, a steady stream of new people began moving to the city of Barron. These people were refugees, fleeing a bloody civil war that's claimed more than 300,000 lives in their home country. But when they arrived to the United States, they faced some new challenges relating to language, cultural, and religious differences. This hour, we're talking about the Somali refugee population in Barron, Wisconsin. We'll hear some of their stories, we'll learn about the early challenges they faced, and we'll talk about how far they've come at building their own community right here in western Wisconsin. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning us in this morning. I'd like to introduce my guests this hour. First, I'd like to welcome to the program Nazra Hashi. She is a refugee services coordinator for Workforce Resource in Barron. And Nazra, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Next, I'd like to welcome Abdisattar Dune. Abdisattar is a refugee resource specialist for Workforce Resource, also in Barron. Abdisattar, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And next, I'd like to welcome Sue Lane. Sue is the Regional Operations Director at Workforce Resource, and we'll get into just exactly why we've got so many people from Workforce Resource on the program. But Sue, thank you so much for being here as well.
Thank you for inviting me.
Our pleasure. And finally, I'd like to introduce Kim Franzen. She's an English teacher, English as second language teacher, that is, for the Barron Area School District. And Kim Franzen, thank you for taking the time.
It is a great honor.
Thank you. And listeners, we'd like to hear from you as well. What are your experiences with this community, this Somali population in Barron? And for that matter, if you are a refugee yourself, Somali, Hmong, what have you, give us a call and let us know what your experiences have been coming to western Wisconsin. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615, and you can also leave a question or a comment on our Westside Facebook page. So stay tuned to that. So I'll start with you, Abdisattar, and as I mentioned, Somalia has been the victim of a pretty awful civil war for, I guess it's been more than 20 years now, which has caused a lot of people, tens of thousands, to come to the U.S. And when did you or your family come to the U.S. and how?
Actually, my brother was here before we came to the United States. He is the person who responded us to come here. So except my brother and nine of us, my mom came here in 2004.
Okay. And you need to be sponsored to be able to come to the U.S. as a refugee? Is that how it works?
Actually, the process has multiple, layers. So some people are just sponsored through agencies such as the UNHCR for refugees always give a resettlement agent, then the United States or any other country will say, yes, we are happy to welcome or, you know, resettle these refugees. Others are like me who their brother was here and they say, my family is out there in Africa, so I need to re-sponsor, my family. Then that is how some families come.
All right. So why? Why did your family, the rest of, you know, your nine siblings decide to follow after your brother's footsteps?
Because the situation, when we just moved from, fled from Somalia, we came to the refugee camps, which was actually
neighboring Kenya,
in Kenya. And the refugee camp was not pleasant to live. So, there was a whole of challenges. The weather was not nice. There wasn't enough food for the whole people. There wasn't, health care in that matter, and there wasn't actually education as well. My brother decided, to join with him. So that's how we just came to find, a good place to live.
And Nazra Hashi, same question for you. When did you and your family or whatever siblings came with, how did you come to the U.S.? And did you arrive in Barron first, or was it in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area?
My situation was the same as the Abdi Sitar or any other refugees. When I fled from Somalia in 1992 and ended up in camp refugee in Kenya, I was with my relatives at that time, and we came to Otanga, Mombasa, Kenya, and we have been there about a year and a half. And the family I was with, my relative, is that her son was in Virginia, and he sponsored us, and that's the reason I came to United States in 1993, because, you know, there were a lot of killing. There is no good life in the camp refugees, no food, you know, not shelter, no education, and everyone was trying, you know, since we fled our country, how you can get better life, so how you can support your family back home. So I ended up in July 1993 in Virginia, and then moved to Detroit. I was there about a couple of years, went to college, and In late 1996, my dad passed away in Kenya. Then I moved to Wisconsin, Barron. I have some friends. And then I started working in Genio Turkey store and then moved up. And right now I'm working with Workforce Resource. That's how I ended up.
So what did you get a degree in, and what was your field of study in Detroit?
I had previous bachelor degree in chemistry back home. And also I went, you know, I didn't receive it, my associate, but I was very close. When my dad passed away, you know, I was the head of the family. You know, I decided to go, you know, to work two jobs so I can help my family. We have two family. My dad was married, you know, two wives, and we have a lot of brothers and sisters. So I decided, you know, to stop schooling and help the family.
So when you're working these two jobs, are you sending money back home?
Yeah, I sent money back home.
Wow.
To support not only my family and also the relatives, my aunt, my uncle who was in the camp refugees, to support the family. Yeah.
So both of you, and I'll start again with Abdi Sitar. And when you decided to move, did your family or you and your brothers have time to plan and have time to save up money and learn about, you know, this place that you were going to be moving to when you decided to leave the camps?
Actually, all the decisions was my brother was making.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's the person who was actually had the money and knew America well. So he talked to the immigration, actually the IOM. Then he just filled out some papers, and then we called from, you know, they have offices in Kenya, particularly in Nairobi, and that is how we just started the interview. So we have only, you know, we were asking our brother how is like in America, and he was talking, you know, about it is a nice place. You can, you know, start a fresh life and have a work. You can go to school and, you know, kind of those things. But, you know, all the burden was on him. So he was planning, and he just come up, you know, sending money to us to, you know, buy clothes to actually, you know, take whatever we can to bring here. So he was making all the decision.
So when you got to, did you come straight to Barron then?
No, all my family live in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Yeah, we just came there. I was there about a couple months. Then I just decided to move here. I had a friend, and I was told that there's a turkey plant that I can actually start working and save some money to buy a car. When I came, I actually came only to stay a couple months and buy a car and go back, but that didn't turn out that way. So I end up staying here, married, have a kid.
Congratulations.
Know. Yeah. So
what did you know about American culture at Nazara before you came here? And was there anything about the way we live here versus, I mean, that was shocking or hard to get used to? I mean, aside from the weather, I would imagine.
When I was in Africa, we used to watch, you know, the American movie. Mm-hmm. And everyone was thinking, you know, that when you, if you get chance to come to United States, you will get, you know, that opportunity. You know, you will have a nice car, nice house. And also, you know, living in the camp refugee was, you know, very hard. Mm. So we know that if we work hard when we get in the United States, it will, the life will be better. But coming to United States, there is a lot of challenge, language challenge, you know, a lot of barriers, language, culture, religion, and, you know, you don't have a, getting driver license is different. So it was a lot of challenge, but you know, a lot, everyone, the refugees, they have, you know, they get, you know, they have a lot of effort trying to find a job. And there's a lot of relatives and friends who were before us, who were helping us to get a job. So,
So the language, how was the language barrier difficult as far as, was it hard to find a job with that, without being able to speak the language at the time?
Especially the big cities.
Yeah?
Big cities. You know, some people drive half an hour to get a job, and you don't have a driver license, you don't have a car, language barrier when you have, you know, you will ride with some friends, you have interview, you cannot speak the language, and then people will say, do you have driver license? With the interview, you know, and then if you don't have driver license, and also, you know, that you don't have a car, it's difficult. They will say, we will call you, and you never heard back. So it was, you know, easier to move the small cities so that you can get a job.
You know, that's interesting, because I thought it would be the opposite, that the bigger cities would maybe have more resources like that. But Abdi Sitar, you'd like to chime in.
The language is actually the big barrier, and this is, you know, the whole refugee population. You know, the language is the thing that you have to communicate in order, you know, to actually know what you are required in the job place. So, not knowing the language is actually very frustrating. I came here while I had, you know, a very good basic English language, and still, you know, it was very hard for me. You know, imagine someone who can't even speak is another challenge. So, Jenny Turquisto is the only place that employs a lot of the refugees in our area, and you know, they don't require English language, so they have interpreters that actually they hire to help the employees to actually know what they're required to do. So the language is very big barrier, and in terms in, you know, integrating to the local people, you know, that is something, you know, the language has, you know, a big impact.
Nazra.
And also, you know, it's a small town. Even in summertime, you can walk, you know, if you don't have a car, where that Somalian lives, a small town, you can walk to work.
Sure.
And it's easy to learn, you know, how to drive, and it's easy to save. People are working, you know, not only 40 hours, they work overtime in order to save some money. And they have some, two Lazian people who are, you know, helping Somalians, you know, to fill the application so you don't feel. And there's a lot of Somalians who are working at Genio, so they help one another. You mm-hmm. get someone to help you learn how to drive. And eventually, after a couple of months, when you save some money, you will buy your own. And that's it's easier than the big cities.
Now, Kim Franzen, I'd like to speak with you because the Barron School District, I'm not sure how long you've been with them, but did they have an English second language program prior to the Somali population starting to grow?
No, I actually started the English as a second language program in 2000. I had the minor. I was teaching at the middle school at the time, and what happened was we had just two Somalis at the middle school where I was, and I said, hey, how about you just give me a section and I'll just work with them one-on-one. And then the following year, the high school and the elementary school, who were receiving not only Somalis but some Mexican migrants in, they were like, hey, we need some help too. Mm-hmm. And so then I moved to more of a K-12 program. And at the elementary school, we had more Mexicans who were working on the dairy farms or were migrants. We also had more Somali high schoolers coming over from the Minneapolis area. Mm-hmm. So much of the beginning program was educated refugees that were kind of settled first and then moved over to our school to get the opportunity to graduate.
Now, and part of that has to do with, or at least I've read in a report that came out in 2012, kind of talking about this community and this situation, that Minnesota has a test that we don't have in Wisconsin. Could you explain that?
Sure. Minnesota has a graduation requirement. That's a test that they started at 10th grade taking, and they have to pass it in order to get. There are other states like Texas, Ohio, that have this graduation test. It's comparable to our WKCE that we take in the 4th, 8th, and 10th grade, but we don't say that you have to pass this to get a high school diploma. The state of Wisconsin did consider doing a graduation test probably, you know, 10 years ago, but the lack of funding pretty much killed the idea. So many of these kids were coming over from Minnesota to graduate. The highest that we had was probably 2004, 2005, where there was almost 75 high school Somali students.
Out of a total class size of?
There's probably 100 per class, and we have four grades. So, you know, it could have been up to the upper 400s. Mm-hmm. That was the largest class.
So how unique is, I mean, do other districts in the area around, you know, in the maybe the Barron, Washburn County area, do they have anything like what?
No. No, and so when I researched ESL programs, I had to go to Wausau. And Wausau and Barron, you have a major size difference. And so when we tried to find funding for our unique situation, the state and the DPI was very generous in you know, finding us funding to help with programming to provide students an opportunity. And at that time, early on, it was just high school students. I mean, we had pockets of elementary kids, but the Somali community as a whole in the early years were very, very transient. Like Abdi Sitar said, he was only going to stay for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And that couple of months might have turned into a couple of years, and then now they're gone. And so much of the transientness was really hard on the school district. You'd have kids just come for a couple of months and then leave. Mm-hmm. And those kids might not have very good English skills at all. And so we struggled with finding the right combination of finding the support with the numbers that we had at the beginning of the year, because that's where our school funding came from.
Right, right. And the influx and outflux really affects that.
Oh, it does. Yeah. I mean, their schools aren't willing to just hire someone. Okay, so you've increased by 20 students. Well, they might be gone in a matter of months.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Somali population in Barron and the Somali experience in Barron, for that matter, this hour on the West Side. If you'd like to call in with a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. I'm joined by Nazra Hashi, Abdusattar Dune, Sue Lane, and Kim Franzen. We'll have more in just a bit. This is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. We're talking about the Somali experience in Barron. There is a growing community of Somali refugees working, drawn mainly to the area because of work opportunities at the Genio Turkey Store, but they are building a community as we speak. And we're talking about it this hour on the West Side. I'm joined by Nazra Hashi. She's a refugee services coordinator for Workforce Resource. Abdusattar Dune, he's a refugee resource specialist with Workforce Resource. Also, Sue Lane, she's the regional operations director at Workforce Resource. And Kim Franzen, who we just heard from, she's an English as second language teacher at the Barron Area School District. I guess real quick, I want to talk about the Workforce Resource and what role they play in all of this, because I mentioned the titles. And so how did Workforce Resource get involved with the Somali population in Barron? I imagine it was job placement, correct, Sue Lane?
That's correct. I wasn't part of the program when they first came, but I know that we helped to set up the Opportunity Center in Barron, which was to help the Somali, kind of gave them a place to come for support and encouragement to help them get the resources that they needed for whether it be housing or employment or education, whatever that was. And we've supported, Workforce Resources supported that effort since 2001.
So basically you've kind of developed from just, the job placement kind of a thing to kind of being almost like a go-to agency for this population, correct?
That's how it started. And then since then, we've really focused more on the employment area by offering different training programs and partnering with the schools in the area and other agencies.
Now, I want to talk about kind of the adjusting process. And first, I want to speak with our Somalis here, and what was it like, what was first impression, and I'll go with Nazra, first impression of when you got to the Midwest, Detroit and here in Barron, what were your first thoughts?
It was very different. In Detroit, we know there is, a lot of black people in the city, mm-hmm. but in Barron, it was zero. And it was very much different people, different culture, language barrier. And the first time, many people thought that Genio, they used to call at that time Turkey Store.
Yeah.
And it owned Jerome family.
Jerome Foods, yeah.
And they thought they sponsor us. And a lot of people in the local people thought that we are taking their jobs, and it was a lot of problem. It was very hard for us even to rent apartment in Barron, and there were few Somalians, maybe 5-6 in 1996 in Rice Lake. At that time, they used to live in Rice Lake. I arrived in February 1997. Then I went to WATC to get some ESL classes. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any refugees before. There were some Hmong, and they told me, you have to pay it, even ESL classes. And at that time, I decided, I talked to other girls. I said, we are working we are going to work in Barron. We don't have any ESL glasses in Rice Lake. Why we don't move to Barron? Mm-hmm. And it was very hard for us to get apartment. We will look the, you know, the papers. We see vacancy of apartments. When we call and they heard our accent, everyone will say, you know, oh, no, we already rented. Mm. Then I had good friends at work, and then I talked to a friend of mine. I said, here is the paper, you know, this is the number. Would you please call us? We need to get apartment in Barron. You know, there is no way that to live in Rice Lake and drive 15 miles to, you know, to Barron. Mm-hmm. So we need to get apartment in Barron. It's easy for us. We can work a lot of overtime, if, you know. And then she called the landlord, and she set up appointment. And when we met him, it was, you know, I can see his face. You know, he wasn't happy. And right now, he's a friend of mine. Anytime he have empty apartment, he comes to my office and we post. And if he see another Somalian, if they ask him, you know, if he has apartments, he will call me. He will say, if Nasra said, you know, that you are a good person, I will rent the apartment. But first time, it was very hard.
That's interesting. Abdi Sitar, I mean, would you agree with that? Was it tough finding a place to rent at first? And if so, what do you think was the cause of that?
Actually, I came, you know, in 2004 while, you know, the Somalians felt that they're part of the community.
Sure.
So the apartments were available to us, and
okay.
we didn't have any problem at all. But Nazra, what she said is true, and I had a lot of other Somalians as well. At first, they had that, you know, problem. So, and the people were not familiar with the Somalians' culture or Somalians themselves. So that is what I think make them hesitate to rent. So I would add that, you know, when I was coming here to the United States, we used to hear that, and this is all the refugees. I don't know if Nazra's case was different since she came earlier. You know, when you get to America, you will, you know, all the walls you'll touch and you'll just get a lot of money from the wall. So that was something very exciting. And, you know, I didn't actually knew that how it worked. And you have to, you know, work and put money in your account. And, you know, that's how it's supposed to, you know, work. But we had that, you know, expectation, and we, you know, you'll just get a lot of money right away, become rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those was our expectation. So,
well, sorry we couldn't deliver that. But, so yeah. Now, Nazra, with the apartments and maybe other portions of life, when you first came, you were one of the earlier refugees to Barron. Was it fear of the unknown, or do you think there was some racism or something going on?
Both. It was, you know, first a small town, and there's a lot of good people, and it was very hard. It was very hard. People, you know, not familiar with Somalianness, and there's a lot of people who are coming, you know, this week 10 people, next week 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
So the town thought that we are taking over.
Right.
So,
an invasion or
invasion,
something.
So, and it's same thing, you know, if small town like that come Somalian, come a lot of Americans.
Sure.
It would be very hard, but things going well right now.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good to hear. We'll
yeah.
we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah.
And Abdi Sitar, you'd like to
yeah,
add?
I would like to add that, you know, the community as Barron community as a whole has actually welcomed us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some of type of, you know, that prejudice stuff, but, In the large population, no. Actually, they are good, actually, people supporting the community and, you know.
Great. Kim Franzen.
The Somali community is actually, because of declining enrollment, has actually saved several of the programs and services that the school district has provided, because, you know, for many years there was declining enrollment and we were going to have to cut teachers and cut support staff and cut things. And actually it was the increased Somali population that that saved certain things of part of the school.
Now, Nazra, again, as one of the earlier people of Somali population to come to Barron, what about food? Because I was reading in this report, there weren't any halal meats. And could you explain what that means and what that was like as far as trying to, you know, plan your meals?
There wasn't any, you know, we just arrived in Barron. And we didn't have any stores that we can get, you know, goat meat or camel meat. Mm-hmm. And we used to go Fridays to the city and buy. There is a lot of large Somali community in St. Paul, Minneapolis. And we used to get there, you know, rice, goat meat, and whatever we need. Mm-hmm. But right now there is one coffee shop and one market that restaurant and also the grocery that we can get here what we want. Yeah.
So the halal, what does that mean?
That means we want, you know, to make sure the people that we are getting are buying from meat, especially, you know, in Islamic religion, we can eat the meat that Christianists or Jewish, you know, slaughter. It talks about our religion in Holy Book. But we don't know some people, you know, if we don't know the person that we are getting, we are buying from the meat, and especially you cannot get a goat meat in Barron. Mm. So that's what it's called halal meat.
It is basically the same. So the halal is... you have to slaughter the animal in a certain way. Yeah, so that is what is halal means. So, the chickens that is available at the grocery stores are also halal. It's considered halal.
Okay.
Something that you can eat. So, since here there's no goat meat, that is... our daily, you know, meat, you know, the Twin Cities has stores that sell, and they get from local farms or from abroad, like Australia. I heard some goat meat come from there.
Okay. And since we're talking about the religion, Islam, was that another kind of a thing that people were maybe a little leery of and didn't, because prior to the Somali arrival, Christianity basically was the major religion in the Barron area and in much of rural Wisconsin. So Nazar, what was that like when you were coming to town and, you know, it was time to pray or something?
It still is, you know, the Christian in Barron, you know, we are just about 400 people that I don't know exactly, but that's it was very hard. It was very hard. We used to come. We were few people in the early on, and we used to come Fridays, especially to Altoona Masjid in Eau Claire, and then we established it. We rent apartment. The landlord that I was talking about was so nice, and several elderly and myself sat with him. And we talk about that we need, you know, to rent this apartment and to make a mosque. And that's how we started. But it was difficult first time. Yeah, we pray at home.
Gotcha. And yeah. And what about at the workplace? Was Jenny okay with that?
They accommodate. We talk to them and we have space girls are, you know, praying in the female locker room and mm-hmm. males, and they let us, you know, while we are working the prayer time, there is someone coming, taking our spot, mm-hmm. and then we go to pray and come back. They were good at it. Once we explain to them what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Abdisattar?
Yeah, I thought before the Somalians are the only Muslims around here or came here, but there were a lot of Muslims that were here long ago. Some of them are even physicians, engineers. So I come to realize that our Juma prayer, on the Friday prayers, there's a lot of non-African Muslims that come to the mosque. So, you know, it wasn't only the Somalis who, you know, our Muslims who come here. So there's a lot of community, you know, scattered all over.
And now there is an Islamic center in Barron. Is that the apartment, or has that grown into a separate building?
It's we rented, you know, the place, mm-hmm. but the owner, you know, we first before we rented, we talked about. We took him to Minneapolis so he can see the other masjid, mm-hmm. the way that we wanted to look at it. And right now we are planning to buy the building, whole building.
Great.
Yeah.
We're talking this hour about the Somali experience in Barron and the Barron area. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by Nazra Hanchi, Abdisattar Doon, both of Workforce Resource, and Sue Lane, also of Workforce Resource. We're also joined by Kim Franzen, an English as second language teacher at the Barron Area School District. We'll take our final break. If you want to get into the conversation yourself, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. You can ask any of our guests a question or leave a comment. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. And if you've missed part of the program and would like to listen again, check out the Westside Online Archives by going to WPR.org and clicking on the show's link and then clicking again on the West Side. We'll be right back after a quick break. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about the Somali experience in Barron. I'm joined by Kim Franzen, Sue Lane, Abdisattar Doon, and Nazra Hanchi. The number to call in with a question or a comment is 1-800-228-5615. We've been talking a little bit this hour so far about the earlier days of when the Somali population first started moving to Barron and the challenges that were faced by them in the beginning. And now we are where we are at. The community is fairly established in Barron, and now we're looking ahead to some programs. And Kim, we were just talking during the break that there are some partnerships beyond just Workforce Resource and the school district that are aiming to further this relationship between the Barron community and the Somali the sub-community.
Yeah. We've been working with Workforce Resource as well as UW Barron County, as well as WITC, Chippewa Valley Tech, UW Stout, UW Eau Claire, UW Superior, because I think that we're at a point now where we have so many that people are starting to want them in a part of their programs. And so which creating a great partnership only enhances students and it enhances their experience. You know, we created a jobs program where students did community gardening, and that was at least 2-3, maybe even 4 years, where students grew their own vegetables, sold it to the Somali community as well as other people in the community. We do, part of the school does is to want to support the opportunities of higher education, not just, you know, thinking about high school, but thinking about life outside There's been wonderful programs that Workforce Resource has done. There was a CNA class. I don't know if you want to.
We've got a list. We've got a list.
I have a list of a number of things that we offered. We did a, which was very successful, a pre-CDL class where Jane Lilligard was working with our organization at that time, and she taught the students to prepare for that CDL, the CDL training, and to get their CDL license. That was very successful. We also had medical interpreter training, where many people in the community, it's a Somali community, participated in that and then were able to work at the local hospitals and clinics as interpreters. We had the pre-CNA training, which was to really expose mainly the youth to healthcare programs and to the CNA program. They found that there were some things culturally that made it difficult to be a CNA, and we were able to identify some of those things and work through some of those in the training. We also worked with health literacy and numerous other programs.
And Nazra, these relationships that are being forged between different organizations, how important are they for the community that as I mentioned is now fairly established and is growing in Barron?
I think personally, without help from this organization, I think it was very hard for us to navigate to the area, and it helped a lot, workforce. We have office in Barron, and that's, whether we offer, the program or not, that's the first place they come, if they wanted to enroll their children in a school, if we have some programs that Sue talked about. So, and it's the place that they come to get assistance. And we work with economic support, we work public health, and a lot of different agencies in the area.
And as far as, building the community, how important is it to have the Islamic Center? How important is it to have a few businesses that are Somali-owned? And Abdi Sitar, I'll go to you for that.
Okay.
How important is it to create your own identity within a small community like Barron, within a smaller city anyway?
The identity we are just looking is the identity of integration, not only isolating ourselves. The reason that we are just trying to buy the mask is that Saturdays and Sundays when there's no school where kids can hang around and learn from their culture, and possibly if they can get help for their homework as well. So right now we have the opportunity center which is available to the community, but you can't take them that a lot of kids, so the space is so limited and it can't handle a lot of kids, and the community is actually growing a lot. There's families that are having a lot of kids, a lot of families are moving in, so the community is growing. In terms of I just forgot the part of the question.
Well, as far as the and I like that you brought up the point that it's about integration. It's not about separating yourself from it, but still, changing the identity of the entire city from just being a white monoculture to a multicultural city. Nazra.
Yes, I mean, having a business, it's good thing that and people can come to the restaurant. They will learn Somali culture, Somali food. And that shows we are part of the community we would like to grow with and have more business. And, you know, it's a good thing.
And Kim, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I think that many of these businesses is a great opportunity for regular Native Barren to learn. Mm-hmm. And part of what we did at the schools is we felt that it was always the student's job to be that ambassador of their culture, to do public speaking, to go to different places in the area and tell them, this is what Somalis are. Because in the beginning, there was a lot of negativity. It was not pretty. Mm. There was problems in the community. There was problems in schools. And it was through education, communication. It was through giving Somalis the opportunities, the reason why they came into this country. And that was very valuable. And I think educating the white population of Barren was really, really important to where we are today.
And then Nazra, when you would, how many people that you met, you know, white people here in this area, did they have any idea of what you had been through and the reason why you were here? And when you would tell them that, would they kind of, what were the reactions?
I mean, it's the first time, as I said, it was very hard. Mm-hmm. It's a small town, but things are getting much better with the community, and we are educating them. I go to the local churches, you know, to talk about Somali culture. We go to WATC, mm-hmm. and UW Barren, and to educate people. So right now, the first time it was very hard. I came as single. I get married. I have 4 children. My oldest is going to the, you know, 5th grade, mm-hmm. in, you know, Barren. So things are getting much better and smoother.
How important was soccer, the introduction of soccer this?
It was huge.
This was a...
Okay, so when the first Somalis came, there was a lot of negativity in the school system. They didn't know why the girls were wearing their head coverings. Mm-hmm. And so students would wear their hoods up and say, well, if she can wear her head covering, I can wear my hood up. Just a lot of ignorance.
Yeah.
But then the superintendent, Monty Hallberg, decided to add boys and girls soccer. And it was huge to a lot of people because they were part of a team and we wanted to win. And if Abdi can make that goal for us to win, that's great. And you had people cheering for Abdi to make that goal or, you know, whoever. At that time, there wasn't, there's probably, you know, maybe two to five on the team. You know, now we have maybe 8 to 10 on the team. And you know, with us going to the state finals, you know, to the state, that was really big. Hmm. And it was really great.
And you wanted to jump in as well, Sue?
Yes, but not about soccer.
Right, right.
But it was more of a getting back to the employment, and that we, you know, originally pretty much the only place for people to work was at the Genio Turkey Store.
Yeah.
But now we've been approached from businesses in the area who are looking for employees. Hmm. And one of those businesses with regarding industrial sewing. And Kim, maybe you can explain that class.
The school district has to provide some kind of parent outreach for our parents. And so we decided a couple of years ago to give them some kind of sewing skills. And so what we did was 5 Saturdays, we would get a group of volunteers to give Somali women that are parents some general sewing skills to be able to, okay, the zipper's broke, so how do I fix it? Mm-hmm. And to give them the general sewing skills. And so what we did was we ran it for 2 years, and now they're looking at the place in Chautauqua to hire some people that do have these general, it's always about baby steps. Mm-hmm. It's always about baby steps and getting people to believe in themselves.
And with that, we're just about out of time, but I want to ask both Abdi Sitara and Nasra, if somehow the struggle, the civil war, the violence in your home country would end tomorrow, would you stay or would you go, Abdi Sitara?
Probably stay.
Why is that?
The reason I have much opportunity here, and if the situation gets better in Somalia, I think it takes 40 years from now to actually get better. So,
right.
There's no room for me there. I think so.
Okay.
And I will, take this opportunity to appreciate that all the local Beren and also, the schools and other identities as well as workforce resources that has, helped us through these difficult times. Thank you.
No, thank you for that. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we were getting close. And Azar, very quickly from you, what would you do if you had a chance to go back home and it was more stable there?
Yeah, if it's stable, I hope it will be stable. Inshallah, we say God willing. I hope to go back and educate my people and use what I have learned here to help them and, that's what I would like.
Great. Yeah. Thank you all so much for the conversation. I really appreciate it. Nasra Hashi is Refugee Services Coordinator for Workforce Resource. Abdi Sitara Doon is Refugee Resources Specialist at Workforce Resource. Sue Lane is Regional Operations Director there at Kim Franzen, English as Second Language Teacher at Barron Area School District. Thank you all so much. And we'll chat again next Monday.